Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So this is the final episode of my coverage from the Snap Developer Conference of LensFest. Today's episode is with Joe Darko, who's the global head of developer relations at Snap. So wanted to talk to Joe just because he's helping to build all these different developer relationships, and a lot of XR device launches really live or die on what kind of software ecosystem is going to be made available once they are headed towards this consumer launch next year. So I see Snap is in this position of having this very strong vision of what they see the future of computing is going to be with these head-mounted augmented reality glasses, that they're not really compromising on that. They're having binocular displays. The field of view isn't huge. It's probably 40 degrees. The vertical field of view is a lot higher. And as they get closer to the consumer launch, they're going to be expanding out on all the different specifications and making it lighter, better thermals, better battery, wider field of view, all the things that they're getting feedback on, they're improving upon. They didn't give any additional details for what their target specs will be. They may be still in the process of developing all that, but probably sometime next year, if I were to guess, sometime in the third quarter or fourth quarter, probably sometime after Labor Day. That's usually when all these XR devices end up getting launched. We just had like the Samsung's Galaxy XR launch this week, as well as the second iteration of the Apple Vision Pro with M5 chip. The Meta Ray-Ban display glasses launched at the end of September. So basically, this is the time of the year when all the new XR devices are being launched as you gear up towards holiday season. And so that's what I expect to be as well for Snap as they gear towards their consumer launch of the Snap specs. And they're doing their own software stack. They're building their own operating system. And so they're handcrafting a custom bespoke format to be able to develop their own lenses. So the big question that I have as we start to move forward towards next year is what kind of experiences are they going to be able to provide? And also, what is their focus of this product going to be? Is it a enterprise B2B type of device where people are going to be buying it for very specific enterprise or B2B use cases? Or is this something that is going to be mostly for location-based entertainment? Or is it going to truly be a consumer device? And I say that with some hesitation just because Magic Leap tried to do a similar approach where they thought what they were building was a consumer device and that there really wasn't a consumer market that was ready to pay that much money for a experimental piece of hardware and something that didn't really have much compelling applications for them to use. So as we go over the next year, then I'm just really curious to see like what different types of industry verticals are they going to really be focusing on? Is it truly a consumer device? Are they going to be continuing to develop these entertainment-based applications? And what other types of utility applications are going to be possible with this new Superbase integration to be able to develop more sophisticated backends? So they're at the point where they're going to be kind of moving towards all these different visions. So Joe Darko has his own vision for how he starts to develop this type of ecosystem, starting with the innovators and early adopters, and eventually, you know, wanting to cross that chasm into the mainstream, which is what they're headed for next year. So I'll be very curious to see how they continue to do that at, you know, say Augmented World Expo and being in conversation with the developer community. If there's anything that Snap has going for it, it's the fact that they have close conversations with what the developers want and what they need, and they've really been responding to that. So clearly a lot of open questions as to how this is all going to play out. And I think it's worth hearing what Joe Darko has to say in terms of some of his vision for how to answer some of those questions and to how to continue to cultivate and develop that developer ecosystem. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Joe happened on Thursday, October 16th, 2025 at the Snap Developer Conference of LensFest, happening at the Snap headquarters in Santa Monica, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, I'm Joe Darko, and in the world of XR, well, I'm the global head of developer relations at Snap, and in the world of XR, I'm here to build relationship with developers, and from a Snap perspective, get them to really build in our ecosystem, get them to build these experiences now for Snapchat, through Camera Kit, for mobile and web, and also for the future of AR glasses through Spectacles. So our job is, how do we find the best developers across the world? Earlier, I stated that talent is equally distributed, but opportunity is not. How do we find these developers across the world who are talented? How do we bring them into our ecosystem? Give them the opportunities, whether it's tools, platform to really build experience that they want to build. And how do we help them monetize and build a business and build a career?
Great. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Oh, yeah. So I've been in tech for a very, very long time. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I've always wanted to, one, initially I wanted to be a scientist because I wanted to find a cure for AIDS. I'm always looking for solutions. And that kind of put me along the path of really finding solutions from a technical standpoint. How do you build, let's say, applications or solutions for people to really leverage? Went to college, I studied information science technology at Penn State University. After that, worked with various tech companies and worked with developers from all different backgrounds. First, enterprise devs, and eventually started working with developers in the XR industry. And I've been doing this for over 14 plus years now. And with XR devs, I've been working with them for over, let's say, 7+ years.
And what really drew you to XR as an industry?
So I was building on the ecosystem from, not from an XR standpoint back in the day, but what really pushed me to XR is I've always wanted to be on the cutting edge of technology. So when I saw the potential of XR being the next paradigm of computing, being the next platform where ideas, where solutions are going to be created, I quickly jumped on it. Because I did miss the boat of, let's say, you know, as things move from mainframe to personal computing to mobile, I missed the boat, right? So I wanted to be on the next thing, right? I wanted to really be on the next thing. And the next thing, pretty much, I believed at that time was going to be XR.
Great. And how did you end up at Snap? And what drew you to Snap to be able to work in XR industry at Snap?
So, well, I'm not going to mention any names, but I did work for various companies working in XR space as well, growing the ecosystem for them at that time. And when Snap approached me, so I was paying attention to Snap and what they were doing then. And they had a robust platform. They had a growing ecosystem. So when they approached me, it was kind of like, why not, right? You're a very advanced platform. You want us to build an ecosystem, bring the developers to really build on your platform. I have a relationship with these developers, establish these relationships. Yes, I can bring them over and we can build something great. And to me, one thing at that moment was I saw what Snap was trying to do with AR glasses. They're building these standalone AR glasses, and that was like 2021. And I was like, whoa, I've never seen anything like this before. If anyone has a chance to really crack this, it's probably going to be Snap. So why not join them and why not build an ecosystem for that?
Nice. Last year, I had a chance to attend the Snap Partner Summit as well as the Lensathon, the hackathon that you had. And I had a chance to talk to Sophia Dominguez, and she's no longer with Snap. And so when I was asking folks around, okay, who's kind of the equivalent of what Sophia was doing? And what people said was that, well, there's no one really that's replaced her and what she was doing, but they said probably the closest is Joe and what Joe's doing. So maybe if you agree with that, or give me a sense of like, what's happening with Snap and Spectacles and the role that you're playing in helping to cultivate not only the developer ecosystem, but also where the platform and product. And I guess I'm trying to get a sense of now who's doing what.
Yeah, so Sophia, I work with Sophia a lot. I enjoy working with her, working on her team. And honestly, pretty much I'm doing, I would not say the same thing Sophia was doing. I'm doing it a little bit different from an ecosystem standpoint. Sophia was driving not just a developer ecosystem, but also AR partnerships, right? Right now, that work has been, in a way, split up between me and a couple of other leaders doing that work. But my focus is pretty much developer partnerships. So when you talk about developers, the people really building the application, building the solutions, building the software for our community, building, let's say, experiences on Snapchat, right? That is what I'm focused on. And so when you look at it this way, I shared this earlier with a couple of developers. My vision for next year is how do we scale our efforts? So we've built this and established a relationship. We built the programs. We built a SnapLens network. How do we scale? Because for every platform to grow, you need to find ways to really scale. So my job is how do we build the, let's say, the machine? How do we build partnerships, developer partnership with XR Bootcamp, AWE, GDC? And how do we work with them to scale and reach more people and reach more developers? I believe in one thing. We have great technology. Some will say the best. You heard it today. We have great technology, great platform. We have the robust ecosystem. Now, how do we get more people to be aware of what we're doing? I feel like that is what I'm going to focus on from now and beyond. And you're going to see this kind. A lot of devs do not know about our technology and platform, right? And that is how do we drive that awareness? How do we drive the retention? Because I've seen this. The moment they come into our ecosystem, they get stuck. They fall in love with our community. You see the energy, feel the energy. You see the support. right? And that's one thing I'm trying to do different from what Sophia did in terms of AR partnership. She led the team successfully, did a great job in that front. I was doing this similar work underneath her when she was here, and we do miss her. But it's like, okay, how do we take this to the next level in terms of scalability?
Yeah, and one of the ways that I start to think around the diffusion of this technology is in this model coming from Simon Wardley, who has this kind of way of mapping out these different ecosystems. And so with this Wardley mapping, he's trying to look at different phases of technology diffusion from like an academic idea, custom bespoke enterprise market into mass consumer market, and then eventually mass ubiquity. But with this Wardley mapping, he's trying to look at ways that technology diffuse and where they at on that scale. And it seems like that in order to really get something that's brand new, you have to, in some ways, go through this custom bespoke enterprise market where there's either brand partnerships, location-based entertainment, or other ways where there's like enterprises or B2B type of things that are able to make it so that the consumer market can be at the lowest enough price point of economies of scale and everything else like that. So I feel like some of the major players in the industry, like with Meta, have in some ways tried to skip over that enterprise market and go direct to consumer, whereas where some of the main activity is coming from more the enterprise or LBE space that they haven't been as interested in supporting. And they've had programs to have that support and drop it, and it's been a little bit inconsistent. They've been really having their eye on the prize of trying to push it out to consumer and subsidize the hardware and everything. So as you look at what has happened here in the Snap ecosystem, just curious to hear some of your thoughts on how to kind of organically grow this ecosystem and provide business models that are sustainable for these XR devs to, as we go into these new paradigms of computing, there are potentially new paradigms for how the business models are going to play out with how it's going to make sense financially for folks to spend the time and energy to really invest themselves in the ecosystem. So curious to hear how some of those with New Commerce Kit and other things that you're trying to do to create a vision for where you see that ecosystem going from a business model standpoint.
Yeah. So for me, when I look at it from, I have a philosophy, and I forgot who came up with this philosophy, but that's something I've kind of like leaned on for a while in building ecosystem. So when you talk about technology or diffusion, right, diffusion of tech in general, we start with the early adopters. Everything we've done has been, how do we get these early adopters in-house? How do we get them to really build with us, right? And it's, I feel like this stems from our leadership. Our leadership has a stomach for feedback. It's like, how do we get early adopters that are going to give the feedback? They're going to help you find the use cases. They're also going to help you with like some of the negative feedback you're going to hear in the ecosystem. You're going to hear it directly from them. And you have to be bold enough to really get something that is not maybe completely ready for consumers, yes, to those early adopters. We work through them to kind of like gain the insights, because they are, from a business standpoint, they work with a lot of these businesses that sometimes we are not working with. Some of these use cases that enterprise folks want, they work with them directly. They know. So working with them, we get that first and foremost. Well, everyone will say there's a risk there, right? If you turn off these early adopters, you're probably gonna mess up the ecosystem forever. Luckily for Snap, we've been able to build a strong relationship with them where we are open to their feedback, good or bad, and they've stuck with us. Now, after early adopters, you go to innovators. After you get all the feedback, how do you innovate with the broader community? It's also going to be a fraction of folks, right, who are going to be able to jump on board. But now your ecosystem is growing. So we've done that as well. And now when I look at our ecosystem, I believe we've crossed that chasm of early adopters and innovators to the point that we're getting more people who are interested in it, find those use cases, right? And we still continue to find those use cases for XR. Because people will say, well, there are already use cases for XR. I disagree with that. I feel like from a consumer standpoint, enterprise standpoint, we're still unearthing those use cases. You saw at a hackathon, some ideas that we've not even seen before, like, oh my God, this would be great, right? If we can fund these developers to really build with us. So we are at that point where now we're growing our ecosystem beyond the early adopters and innovators, to the point that we're gonna get more developers moving to next year, more developers who are willing to really build for consumers, who are ready to now move from a consumer standpoint to enterprise. What are solutions for businesses right now? And I think that's where we're at right now. And when I look at that kind of like, let's say, bell curve, it kind of rises from early adopters, innovators, it gets bigger. Then eventually, once you get over the chasm, now you're going to get to, like, let's say, all sort of developers and consumers who are going to come with so many different ideas. So I think we're at that point. And that's why I think the timing of Specs 2026 it's perfect next year because we're going to find more devs who are going to be able to build sort of experiences for consumers. And I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, it's something that crossing the chasm is something that XR still hasn't necessarily seen on scale to see how what is the thing that's really going to take off. I mean, to some extent, Meta has been saying that the Ray-Ban Meta AI glasses that they have seem to have a certain amount of momentum in the market of growing year over year. So it seems like that this kind of AI glasses idea seems to be, you know, at least apart from what has been happening in more of a niche of virtual reality and the Quests and, you know, this virtual reality ecosystem that's been primarily focused on gaming. But I guess the form factor is something that, you know, having all day wearables is sort of like the end goal. And I think there's always this trade-off of trying to put as much capability as possible, but doing this balance between weight and thermals distribution. We didn't hear much around like how those different trade-offs are being negotiated for the consumer launch next year, but just curious to hear a bit around like whatever you can share around what kind of feedback you've been hearing from the developers to see, okay, here are the things we need to improve on in terms of battery life, thermals, how long is this going to last, and yeah, just the kind of the form factor of the thing.
Yeah, so I have to say this first, right? At the end of the day, we are fighting against physics or working with physics, right? One or the other. When we talk about feedback from developers. And by the way, the feedback has been amazing. Like I said, you see this firsthand. We're a feedback culture. We love feedback. Good or bad feedback. We don't shy away from that, right? When you look at the XR industry and the glasses industry, and I'll say this, I've worked with a lot of these XR companies, and everyone is trying to build towards this world of XR, AR glasses. Everyone is trying to get there. People are attacking it from different standpoint, right? We on Snap, on our end, straight up, we're like, we're going to straight for the juggler. We're going straight to build these glasses. That's why we believe we're the leader in the space, right? Other companies are seen from a different perspective. Hey, we're going to come out with smart glasses, right? And then embed AI into them, displays into them, eventually build towards that world, right? Other companies are coming from it from a VR standpoint. How do we cultivate a VR ecosystem? How do we get these devs who can build these experiences, rich experiences, and eventually, as the form factor gets better, as the tech gets better, we migrate them to XR. But for us, it's not easy, but we went straight for it. We're going to build these glasses, and we're going to really get developers on board. Now, in terms of the device, the feedback we've heard is, hey, can you make it slimmer? Can you make it lighter? Can you make the field of view bigger? Can you increase the battery life? And they tell us from a developer standpoint, well, why do you want the field of view to be bigger? Well, for these experiences, right? And that's where we get deeper into the feedback they're giving us. It's not because from a consumer standpoint, anyone can tell you that. But from a dev standpoint, what are you trying to build? Why does a field of view matter, right? And so we get that deep feedback from them and from their perspective. Hey, maybe for this connected experience, we want this field of view for this X and Y reason. And honestly speaking, we've taken that feedback in, and what I can share is every piece of feedback, we are working on it. We are trying to make it lighter. We're trying to make it faster, right? But we are still fighting against physics. How do we ensure that we can cool the battery, right, to make sure it doesn't overheat? How do we ensure that if we increase the field of view, we can also decrease the weight and make it feel lighter, right? So I can't share a lot about what we're doing internally, but just know that every piece of feedback we heard that you've probably also heard, we are working on it aggressively.
Yeah, back on September 8th of 2025, Evan Spiegel put out an email that was sent to all the employees 14 years at Snap, and that it was referenced in the talk that you gave in terms of like showing that Snap is both trying to incorporate more and more games within the context of what's happening in Snapchat, but also that the spectacles is really something that is really a vision that for the past decade that Snap has been working on AR lenses, and that there's this vision that the next paradigm of computing is on this trajectory of the kind of logical progression from an AR lens filter of people vomiting rainbows 10 years ago to now head-mounted AR glasses to having your own operating system, your own game engine that's the Lens Studio that's a very pared down. And so you've got this whole vision that's going towards these glasses. And in that, Evan starts to share some of his vision for why this is a part of the vision of the future of technology that he has and that the whole company of Snap is working towards. So just wondering if you could share a little bit about kind of summarizing that vision of like, why spectacles? Why is this important to move in this trajectory of kind of the next wave of computing?
Yeah, so when you look at it, so let me touch base on the games piece as well, right? Because you heard this at LensFest. In Evan's letter, he calls it out, right? When you look at how people really engage specifically when it comes to games on Snapchat, people want to connect, right? Beyond just the core product value of messaging. People want to play games with each other, right? They want to play games with their friends and family. They want to really be at different places and still be able to stay in touch. I've played some of these turn-based games, and they're fun. I've played with some Slam employees, and we spent like a week to complete a game, right? And anytime I came back on the app, that's what I wanted to complete. That's what I wanted to really, and we've seen it really grow. Our, let's say, developers, our developer community has grown. The developers can build games, and we want to build games, and engage with Snapchat has grown. Now, on the spectacles piece, when Evan talks about the next paradigm of computing and the next platform, I think Evan truly, truly, really believes in it, and we truly believe in it as well at Snap. Because when you look at where the world is going, we move from mainframe computing to personal computing to mobile phones, right? And all of these, we have people still have PCs, people still have their tablets, they still have their laptops. They've coexisted with their cell phones. Now, I see a world, we believe in a world where glasses are also going to be part of this arsenal of devices that we have. So there are certain things that will live on your desktop or laptop. There are certain things that will live on your tablet, which we better serve on your tablet. Certain things that serve better on your phones now than your tablets. So when you walk away, you don't need a tablet, you don't need a laptop. You can still work on your phones, and they're way better. They're better served on them. Same thing, in the future, there are certain things that are going to be better served on your glasses. Some may coexist. I can answer an email on my phone and still answer an email on my laptop or my desktop. It's fine, right? But when I'm on the go, I want to answer emails on my phone, not on my tablet. It's a little bit bigger. There are certain experiences that will live primarily better served on your glasses. And that's the world we're getting into right now. And also with advancement of AI, advancement of computer vision, understanding your world around you, AI being able to really engage with you and the world in front of you and people around you, certain things are really only going to be served on your glasses. For instance, when I think of these examples, when I go to conferences and talk to people, they ask me this question, well, what are some of the use cases? Think about going to a museum, for instance, right? People not go to a museum, they're not paying attention to the tour guides, they're using their phones, trying to really be in the moment and also remember the moment, right? But with AR glasses, I can be in the moment. I may not need a tour guide per se. I can be in the moment and still really feel present at the same time, in the sense of now the AR glasses can really understand what is happening around me, can pick up a statue of any historic artifact and give me the history whilst I'm there, hands-free, engaged, feel in the moment and be part of history as well. So that is one experience of like, okay, when it comes to like an experience of a museum, it's going to live better on AR glasses. Now, some experiences, cell phones may still play a role in that. We're not denying that. If you ask me personally, as sort of maybe what anyone at Snap would say, I will say they will coexist. Because the bet was cell phones were going to replace what? Tablets or laptops? Never did, right? And we still enjoy both of them at different times or maybe together. So same thing, AR glasses is going to feel the same, right? There are things that we believe cell phones will do better, tablets will do better, and we're going to let them handle it. But the use cases, and you're part of the hackathon judging panel, we talk about these things. Like, some of these things are not going to live well on AR glasses alone. Maybe they're better served with other devices. But some of these experiences should be served with AR glasses. And those are some of the use cases we're chasing after. So to me, I see it as people do believe sometimes it's going to replace other devices we have. Personally, and once again, being careful with my words, personally, I don't think it's fully going to replace. It's going to replace certain things that we do with our world, and it's even going to be better served in those kind of like experiences, right? And that's what we're trying to find with our developers. Help us find those experiences, those use cases that will be better served with AR glasses. Help us build them. We want to build them with you. We want to build them in open, and we want to help you build a business around it.
Yeah, one of the things I was really struck by reading through Evan's letter that he sent out on September 8th is that he was commenting around how Snap is not even in the Fortune 500. There's a certain amount of revenue that you have a target, so they're kind of at the edge of the Fortune 500, not even in the Fortune 500. And so Snap is competing with these different companies like Meta, Google, Apple, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world that are in this space. And what I find fascinating is that Snap is kind of the dark horse in this race of having a strong vision, investing in it, having a clear idea for how this is an evolution of what Snap has already been doing for over a decade, but that there's been kind of a dedication to produce hardware that feels like very much on par and beyond what HoloLens 1 and 2 was able to do. And so, you know, again, billions of dollars from Microsoft on that, where they didn't have a clear vision for how they were going to actually bring that to market. And they had an early lead, but then they took a step back. So I guess the larger question is around that. It seems around that, like, Snap is punching above its weight in terms of innovating, pushing for the technology, but also, like, the real value of cultivating an ecosystem of developers that are pushing the edge of the technology for what's possible, whereas not all the other companies are doing the same level of integration with their developer community and having events like this and really engaging the community. And so it feels very community-driven and very developer-driven in a way that the other companies don't have. And so in that way, there's certainly an edge, but there's still questions in the back of my mind in terms of all the economies of scale of what it means to kind of launch these products at a large scale and all the revenue that's required to really properly launch some of these new technologies at scale. So just curious to hear some of your thoughts on Snap being kind of like the dark horse. And from some perspective of the outside analyst, but from someone who's inside the industry, I see how far ahead Snap is, but still there's like these larger challenges of what it takes to kind of really bring a product like this to mass consumer scale.
Man, I love this question, Ken. And honestly, you're speaking to the heart of what Evan believes in, what I believe in, what we believe in at Snap, and personally, why I'm here at Snap. I believe in developers. When you look back at history and how, as a global society, how we have developed, developers have played a role in everything that we do and where we are today, right? And I've seen this firsthand with multiple companies and how sometimes they had, in the past, pretty much pushed their developer community aside and lost. We see the value of developers. We see, and to your point, maybe we had a dark horse, right? And I love that position to be in, right? Because sometimes, you know, as being an underdog, you're able to focus on what you have to focus on, and you're able to deliver in silence and in peace, and eventually you win. And I love that position because I think the bread and butter of what we're trying to do focuses on developers. We have the tech. Like, there's no debate about that. Well, people may debate that. But honestly, we have the tech. We have the platform. We have the tools. We have the commitment to invest in this, right, and stay in this race. One thing that we have that I believe other companies don't have, we're also in this game, is also the developer ecosystem. And that is something that we've done for over the past, let's say, decade. And now we've ramped up investment in that area. And to me, that is our secret sauce. If I'm to tell you one thing that will help us win is developers. Anyone who has won in a platform race, platform game in the past, once again, not to mention any names, they won because of developer ecosystem. And I think that is why we do what we do. That is why we do LensFest. That's why we bring in our developers to be part of the hackathon. That is why we're humble with feedback. That is why whenever we close the feedback loop, we report back to the developers. Hey, you give us feedback and we did it and made it happen. That is why developers say we're a kind team. We embody that value. And that is why we're not going to quit no matter what, right? Because I think when you look around you, we have developers from all around the world. They're the ones who are going to build solutions for their audience to drive that demand for consumers. And that is just a trick. The trick is find developers who can build solutions for their culture, for their people, for their audience. If they're able to do so, you're now going to open a whole new opportunity to kind of like build. You're talking about economy of scale. Once you tip that side of the spectrum, there's going to be that demand. And when that demand comes, you're not going to have any issues with consumers getting what they want, having the applications they need, right, to do what they do in their lives. So let's say if you're a developer, Kent, you're based somewhere around the world. You're able to build a solution that resonates with your audience, right? Your audience are going to come back and say, how do I get this device? How do I use this application on this device to solve a problem in my life? So to me, that is our secret sauce. And we're not going to give up on that. We're going to keep pushing. Whether we're a dark horse, whether we're not a dark horse, we see it as the key to our success, and we believe in that. And also, one thing I would say is, it's not just finding the developers. is making them successful. If developers are going to stick to your platform, they need to make money. They need to find ways to really be successful in the platform. They need to be heard and respected. They need to feel are part of the community. And our developer community, I can tell you, is growing. Next year, if you come to LensFest, it's going to be way bigger than this. And that's because we have a plan on how to scale it with our ecosystem enablers that we're trying to really, and our developer ecosystem partners that we're trying to really bring on board and engage with.
Yeah, and I think that the big open question is some of these new business models. And there has been traditionally like sell an app, just like the mobile phone with iPhone and Android, sell application, and that's where a lot of the revenue stream comes in. And then for the platform holder, there's like a 30% cut that comes in that both Apple and Google have been able to kind of really continue to develop that platform. So now with the Commerce Kit, it seems to be more of like in-app purchases rather than buying it. So just curious to hear if this is a move away from like just app-based economic models and more towards service-based or things that you have a value add where you get a taste of something, but you want to expand in some sort of like subscription service.
For that, I feel like this is something that we need to kind of like dive deeper on. There are a lot of things I can't share now because it's still very, very early based on what we announced and what we discussed today. So this is something I would like for us to really sit down and dive deeper into, but I can't share more at this moment, at this time.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think that's one of the big open questions
exactly.
As to...
Yeah, because right now, we've made that decision to really talk about it right now, but the next path, right, in 2026, we'll be able to dive deeper into that. Developers that tell us about monetization, and we want to show them that, hey, there's a path that we're working on towards monetization. So this is kind of like teasing them as to what we're releasing for them, what is coming up, and the plans we have for them. So we're going to dive deeper into that kind of like business model. It's a great question you asked, but we're not ready to share more on it right now.
Yeah, and one other kind of follow-on as I look at both the position that Snap is in as well as Meta, where creating these XR devices where they're not necessarily having phone-based access or connection to what's happening with Android applications, iOS applications that people are already using within the context of their mobile phones and beyond in tablets and PCs or their computing devices. So in that sense, there's like a whole ecosystem of applications that people are using day to day that companies like Meta and companies like Snap aren't necessarily leveraging those existing behaviors or applications. And so just curious to hear a bit of like, how do you overcome this lack of like breadth of mobile phone ecosystem applications? I saw there was like phone pairing or things that maybe you're starting to mirror some of the stuff to maybe emulate your phone in the context of the device. But it seems like that in the long run, we want to have like more of a seamless integration for all the existing applications that we're already using. And so just curious to hear a bit of like the strategy for going beyond just like the ecosystem for what Snap's building on their own pipeline for LensStudio, and then how the long-term vision for including more and more of these different platforms, how that starts to get fused in together, some like the future of the spectacles.
So I think you heard this earlier in the room. Someone asked Evan this question. It is something we're thinking about strategically from a strategic standpoint. It is something that is top of mind. And currently, we're still in discussion with that and trying to find the best solution for that. So once again, Evan did not answer. Bobby did not answer. I don't want to answer it right now, but it's something we're considering thinking about. Yes.
I did want to ask around AI. I've got a lot of different takes on different people. An adage that's been repeated a number of times, which is that AR is sort of the front end to AI and the back end, where you have kind of more of an experiential way of connecting to these different software and services. And as I come here to the LensFest and see some of the different hackathon, you know, with the Superbase integration and persistent data, it seems like that another emphasis has been to tap into these edge compute functions of calling different AI applications. And so just curious to hear some of your applications for how like AI is feeding into this larger vision for where AR is at right now and where you see it going here in the future of these two kind of sibling technologies that are working together hand in hand.
So I feel like, you know, with the advancement of AI, right, a couple of years ago, pretty much consumer AI, there's been a lot of focus on AI. And I think you heard Evan and Bobby kind of like mention this earlier today. We were kind of like pushing this years ago and driving and investing in this for some time now. But a lot of people kind of sometimes just see AI as just a tool. We see as part of the solution to what we're trying to build, to and near with people to really experience the world around them, to make sense of things around them. So for instance, you see some of the projects people build, right? One of the hackathon projects, it's based with AI, helping them understand the world, able to choose and decide what to put on, what not to put on, right? And that's just an example of how AI helps you solve a problem. And a lot of people are trying to build companies on the back end of AI, but not really solving a legit problem. So that's how we see it. With AR and AI, to your point earlier, brothers and sisters, coexist, make sense of this world, right? If AR is helping you overlay digital objects into this world, how does AI help you interact and understand and give you more information, feed you, let's say, realistic information, get to know you better, understand you better, and get to help you interact with the world around you? So to me, that's how we see AI, and that's how we want to infuse AI into augmented reality. Make sense of the world, help you understand the world, get to know you better, get to know your surroundings, and help you solve problems day to day with utility experiences. And we don't want to build like, okay, this is just an AI assistant app and AR glasses. Okay, what is the end goal of that? We wanted to solve real world problems for people, right? So we want to bake AI into solutions and these applications to make sense of everything around us. Because we, like I said, invested in this, what? We spent $3 billion over the past decade, right? We've done a lot of research. We've been like advanced in terms of this technology. And now with the advance of AI, we're not gonna be caught flat-footed. We're gonna find a way to kind of like bake it in where it makes sense, right? And not just build something that feels gimmicky, that actually solve a real problem. So that's how we see it. And to us, we really, really see it as a perfect relationship, a symbiotic relationship between, you know, augmented reality and artificial intelligence. Not two separate things.
And having a number of different conversations with different folks, and I think another emphasis that I've heard again and again, which is not always the focus of all the other companies in the space, which is privacy and having some way that you have, with the Snap Cloud, all this processing that's happening within the context of your own kind of Superbase instance, but having like a little bit of a staged approach of having experimental flags and having things that are not necessarily pushed out to the wider community, allowing experimentation, but also trying to figure out the story around privacy and how to have the guardrails in place in order to really navigate the future of all these face computers with all these different sensors. Just curious to hear any comments on how you start to see privacy played into this larger story for allowing developers to experiment, but also trying to, as a company, have different guardrails or thresholds for what you're have strong opinions on what is or is not okay.
Yeah, so this is a discussion topic that we have internally consistently. We are a private-focused company in terms of from a privacy standpoint. We do want to maintain that, even as we push the boundaries of technology, even as our developers help us push the boundaries of technology. So one thing is that we do allow them to experiment to a certain degree while not violating privacy at any point in time. And also, we find ways and means to insert guardrails as we build, because privacy is not an afterthought. It's not something that we think about after. Whatever we build or whatever we try to build, we know first we want to get to developers quickly. If we're going to get to developers quickly, how do we ensure that we do not have any privacy breach or privacy situations, right? Because we don't want to kind of like break the trust between Snap and our consumers. We don't also want to break the trust between Snap and our developers. So that's something that we are very, very critical of from the onset. But to your point, to really advance the tech, we need to allow innovation, right? But we're never going to compromise on privacy. No matter what we want to do, try to innovate with our community, that's something that we're never going to compromise on. And I know that's not a full breadth answer that you expect, because one, I'm not a privacy expert at Snap, but I know from a technical standpoint, from a developer standpoint, that's not something we want to compromise on no matter what. And we get developers really kind of like always ask us these questions, try to push the boundary. Hey, is this possible? Can we do this? Can we do that? Right? And always, this is something that we bring it back to our legal team, our privacy teams, and we have these discussions about, right? Hey, what can our developers do, right? How can we enable that kind of like innovative mindset? And also, how do we ensure we don't break that trust with our consumers and also with them as well? Because sometimes I will say developers, whenever they see a new feature, a new toy, they want to build with it. They're excited. They're eager. But we want to make sure we put in the guardrails, right? Because sometimes they don't exactly know the impact of their actions to that point. And they will be honest with you. Oh, wait, we thought we could do this for this reason. and then we have to explain it to them. And that's why our relationship with them is very, very delicate, and it's very transparent, and it's very open, and it's very rich.
So a year ago, I was invited out to come and check out the Snap Partner Summit and see the Spectacles demos for the first time. I came to the LensFest. And so now we're a year later. You've had, I think, 8 different releases for the operating system for Spectacles. You've had lots of innovations with the 2.0 version of the operating system. You've had all these additions to Lens Studio. So you've been able to accomplish quite a lot of progress on building up an entire new pipeline and stack for building applications for Spectacles over the last year. And then now we're anywhere between 6 months to a year to the consumer launch as we look back to, you know, next year, having maybe similar time frame next year, coming back again to have the consumer launch. And so when you start to think around and reflect upon all the progress we've had over the past year and then all the progress you hope to have in the next year, just curious to hear some of your reflections on the journey that you've come so far now and where you hope to get to by the consumer launch next year.
So in reflection of that, one, I got to say the team has really worked tirelessly and endlessly to really kind of like push some of these releases as quickly as possible. Our goal was to get them out there as quickly as possible, get developers to play with it, get the feedback that we need, reiterate, and find better ways to kind of like enable our developers to really build these experiences better, right? So that has been our approach. Get it to devs quickly, get the feedback, and how do we help them really kind of like make this better next go around? So to me, I would say, looking back, one thing I said earlier has been how we collect feedback, how we do that. And that has been at the heart of all these releases. That has been like the goal of all these releases. And we've had hackathons around some of these releases as well. We've engaged student devs, right? The feedback we get from student devs has been very different from professional devs, right? Because of the maybe the learning curve from a student and from a professional dev, right? So to me, it's been such like a blessing to have a front row seat to all the releases that we've released to our developers. And now we're at 2.0. Right? And now, how do we take all those learning and feedback and how do we kind of like march towards 2026? And at the time of 2026, we're still figuring out. You'll be the first one to know once we align on the timeline externally and share that externally. But to be honest with you, it's going to be an aggressive push from now to whenever we release Specs 2026. And every feedback, the feedback collection is not going to stop. We're going to ramp up developer engagements in so many places around the world. We're going to ramp up hackathons as well. Hackathons has been a way to really kind of like stress test everything that we've released, because you've seen it. Developers build firsthand, whether it's in alpha or whether it's in beta, they stress test it to the full potential and we're able to get the feedback we need. So that's what we're going to do from a dev relations standpoint, supporting what our product engineering teams are building. We're going to really push the boundaries of what is possible, engaging more devs. Not devs in our ecosystem right now, devs also who are in different ecosystems, who have not thought of us, but have considered us, right? Who are building on, like, let's say, Unity, right? Who are building on Unreal, who are going to attend GDC, who are going to attend AWE. How do we get them to really think of us and then build with us and give us the feedback that we need as we march towards 2026?
Nice. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of XR, these head-worn augmented reality glasses and integration with AI, what do you think the potential of all that might be and what it might be able to enable?
Oh my God, that is a good question. Fully loaded. So for me, from a personal philosophy, I see a world where people, once again, like I mentioned earlier, there's still going to be tablets, there's still going to be laptops, there's still going to be cell phones, but I see a world where our glasses are going to play a prominent role in our lives day to day. For instance, personal story, I love gardening. If you don't follow me, can follow me on Snapchat. Let's connect on Snapchat. I do post a lot about my garden. And I usually, when I'm gardening outside, I grab my phone, I take a picture, send it to ChatGPT, hey, this is dying. Or is it really dying? Can you help me make sense of this? What should I do? In a perfect world, glasses are going to replace that with AI, as you mentioned, right? I can quickly look at this, and with AI, I'll say, hey, and AR glasses, can you make sense of this right now for me? How should I consider really rebuilding my garden to make sure my plants don't die? And I can look next to the side of my garden, and it could probably just give me 3D version of my garden and how to really kind of like rebuild it in terms of like the grading of like the land, the soil to help with irrigation. It can probably do that and beyond, right? For instance, I also build a lot at home. I'm very handy. I spend a lot of time at Home Depot. In the future, I could pretty much tell, look at the AR glasses with AI infused into it. I can say, hey, I have these 2x4s. I'm trying to build a table for my kids. What is it going to look like? Where do I even start? Right now, what do people do? They go on YouTube, even if they have all the tools that they need, and they ask YouTube, and they spend countless of hours watching, pausing, watching and pausing. In the world of augmented reality, it could probably give me a 3D, let's say, a 3D design of what I should build with literally the 2x4 plywood I had, let's say tools I have, the hammer, the nails I have. It's okay, this is how you go through the process. This is how you build. And I can build it as I go without stopping. So to me, I gave you two examples. Also, as a public speaker, speaking on stage at conferences, people are going to wear AR glasses and use them as teleprompters. And people are not going to know. They're going to feel confident on stage. They're going to feel bold on stage. And they're going to be able to focus on the audience instead of looking at monitors. So these are some of the examples. And I believe it's going to take over the world.
Nice. Anything else left unsaid? Any final thoughts you have for the rest of the XR community?
I will say this. If you're listening to this and if you are building XR experiences, I want you to think of Snap First and I want you to build with us. And I will say, personally, stay with us. We have more coming for you. And let us know. Please share your feedback with me. Follow me on Snapchat, on all other social media platforms, on LinkedIn. And I love feedback. Share your toughest feedback with me and I'll make sure it gets to the right people at Snap.
Awesome. Well, Joe, thanks so much for joining here to help share a little bit about where you've come so far and where you might be going here in the future. And it's always really exciting to see how enthusiastic the development community here is at Snap. And I'm really impressed with how far you've come so far with the Snap Spectacles. And I'm really excited to see where you take this here for the consumer launch here next year. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Kent. See you next time.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a part of the podcast. And so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. So you can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.